Now I want to speak to you for a few minutes on that theme of Tomb Raider Life Changer for Matthew chapter 28. Children, you've got your worksheets and the answers to all of those questions are in this message. All right, so if you listen and follow, you'll get all the answers to those quiz questions on your sheets. Through history, people have said all kinds of things about death, haven't they? I'm going to quote you a couple this morning that I think are hogwash. Here's one. Death is the most beautiful adventure in life. What do you think about that one? I don't agree with that at all. Most people see adventures as great and tremendous things they look forward to. But how can death be the most beautiful adventure in life? Someone else said this. Death is a very dull and dreary affair. And my advice to you is to have nothing whatsoever to do with it. That's terrific, isn't it? Except that none of us have a choice. We can't choose to have nothing whatsoever to do with it. We can't, can we? Our answer, I suppose, to that would be, well, if only I could, if only I could escape death. We can't escape it. We can't avoid it. It's like breathing. Even the children, everybody knows that when you breathe in, what have you got to do after you've breathed in? When you take a breath full of your lungs full of breath, what have you got to do next? You've got to breathe out, haven't you? If you breathe in and you hold it, how long can you hold it for? Not very long. Everybody who breathes in has got to breathe out. We all know that, don't we? Everybody who lives must die. We can't avoid death. It's inescapable. There's no alternative. But Easter Sunday morning gives us this powerful hope for everyone who cannot escape death. It's inevitable for all of us. But this special morning in the life of the Christian church, this special morning in the life of every single believer, it reminds us that God has triumphant power over death. It's not just breathe in, breathe out, and then nothing. That's not true. Because of Easter, we haven't dreamed up this message, but it's based upon the events that we read, something that Jesus did that the whole world can see. He's demonstrated it. But I'm left with a dilemma. I don't know which of these two things is more remarkable. That Jesus was raised from the dead, or that if that is true, that people go on living their lives as if everything was still the same. Friends, I don't know which of those two is the more remarkable. Some people might say, well, I find it remarkable to believe that Jesus can be raised from the dead. Well, you might say that, and I'd say to you, but if he is risen from the dead, I find it even more remarkable that anybody can live their lives still the same. If Jesus is a tomb raider, if he's raided his own tomb and come back to life, then how can he not be a life changer? It's the most remarkable thing, isn't it? If Jesus' tomb is empty and he has risen from the dead, isn't it the most remarkable event in all of human history that none of us can ignore? I want to turn our thoughts to the tomb this morning. The tomb and the events around the tomb that was read for us in Matthew chapter 28. We've got a written account. We read the account in Matthew, didn't we, this morning? It was read for us in Luke as well, but the first reading was from Matthew. And in chapter 28, there we read about some eyewitness accounts of what happened that first Easter morning. So we haven't made it up. We don't have to speculate as to what happened. The world would like to know what happened on Michael Jackson's ranch. The media are speculating as to what happened on that ranch. We weren't there. We don't know. But the whole world is wondering what happened on that ranch and whether he's guilty of any crime. It's no good speculating. They need to go to court. And they need to investigate what the witnesses said. And there are massive consequences, aren't there, if the witnesses are right. And we need to check these accounts too. This evidence. Because there are massive consequences if this account is right. Not that someone is found guilty. That may be the case or may not in Michael Jackson's case. But will transform lives and destinies if Matthew's account here is right. I believe, friends, if you honestly and seriously check out the facts and the evidence of this case around the tomb of Jesus, I think you'll see that there is enough here to warrant an entire change in the destiny of your life. Plenty of people have raided tombs on the big screen. Indiana Jones did it. Lara Croft did it. In real life, people have raided tombs. Howard Carter famously, didn't he? Raided the tomb of Tutankhamun and discovered the gold and the wonderful things there. But nobody has ever raided their own tomb. You can't do it. When you're dead, you're dead. You can't do it. No one's raided their own tomb. Unless Jesus did it. If a dead man came back to life, he must be more than a man. And the world must then be a different place. I want us to look at the characters around the tomb here in Matthew 28. There were four groups of characters. And in their way, each of them had their destinies changed by what happened on that morning. Four groups of characters. The first, both have the same name. There are two ladies that appear in this account here. They've both got exactly the same name, and they're called Mary. The two ladies here, called Mary. And it's described there in verse 1. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. Now, we know these two ladies were a very long way from home. If you turn back a page, you can see it. In Matthew 27 and verse 55 and 56, it describes there, many women were there watching from a distance. They had followed Jesus from Galilee to care for his needs. And among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of Zebedee's sons. There they are, the two Marys, and they're from Galilee. That was hundreds of miles away in the north. So these two ladies are a long, long way from home. And they'd come with Jesus and a lot of their fellow countrymen from Galilee to celebrate this great feast. It was a big party. It was the most important day in the Jewish calendar, the Passover feast, the festival. Children, imagine your birthday and Christmas and your summer holiday all rolled into one. And the day that school finishes, all rolled into one. Massive celebration. That was kind of what it was like at the Passover feast for the Jews. It was a huge celebration where they celebrated God's goodness to them as a people and how they'd been set free from being slaves in Egypt. And so these ladies had come down with Jesus and with all of these other people to celebrate this great festival. They'd been won over by Jesus. They'd seen his compassion and his love. They'd seen the miracles that he did. They'd heard his teaching. They'd experienced his authority, his great wisdom. He didn't have a brain the size of that picture, but he had such wisdom that seemed to suggest to them that he was totally different, extraordinary. And his life had such cleanness about it. He never did anything wrong. They'd been won entirely by his grace. The way he reached down to ordinary people. And helped and touched and changed their lives. And now these two ladies, they were devastated. They'd come to the feast to celebrate with Jesus. And he had been killed in terrible circumstances. He'd been betrayed. And captured. He'd been beaten to a pulp. He'd been dragged out in the mid-morning sun. He'd been nailed to a Roman cross. And he'd been killed, crucified by the Romans. Absolute humiliation and shame for the one they thought had come to save them. And all this had happened on the Thursday night and the Friday. And these two women had just been devastated by it. They loved Jesus. They followed him. They'd probably not stopped crying since the moment that he'd been captured. Since the moment that they saw him there on the cross. That you can imagine their hearts broken, smashed with grief, and the tears just endlessly flowing. We can understand that, can't we? But a lot of tears shed in our area recently over the death of a loved one. A little boy. A lot of tears have been shed over Ashley. We can understand that, can't we? It's normal, it's natural when we love, when we lose somebody that we love. But notice what verse 1 says. They went on the very early in the morning on that Sunday morning, the first day of the week. Today is Sunday, it's the first day of the week. And they went on that Sunday morning, and they went to the tomb really early. They weren't allowed to go on the Saturday because Jews weren't allowed to go anywhere near a dead body on their Sabbath day. That was their rules. So they didn't go on the Saturday. Jesus was buried on the Friday night, and they didn't go anywhere near it on the Saturday. But early on the Sunday morning, there they went. The first there. It says it was dawn, doesn't it? At dawn on the first day of the week. In John's Gospel, it actually says it was still dark. So they were the first there. It was really, really early. And they went to the tomb. But notice what they went to do at the tomb, verse 1. Notice what Matthew records they went to do. Just to look at the tomb. It says that, doesn't it? Mary and the other Mary, they went to look at the tomb. That's not going to change anything, is it? Looking at the tomb. That's not going to bring Jesus back. That's not going to change things. They haven't got power to bring him back. They can't roll the stone away. It's a massive, great big stone in front of the tomb. They're just two weak and grieving ladies. They can't change the situation. The situation was gone. It was lost. Jesus was dead. They came just to look. I've seen plenty of people just looking at tombs. I don't mean those who go for a stroll on a sunny afternoon through a cemetery. I've sometimes done that. Perhaps you have. I don't mean that kind of looking. Next time you just wander through a cemetery, look around. There are some people there and they're not walking. They're stood. And they're looking. And they're looking at just one tomb. And in the tomb that they're looking at lies somebody very, very dear to them. And they go, sometimes often, just to look. It expresses their grief and their loss and their pain and their emptiness. And that's what these women are doing. Look, they've gone very early just to look at the tomb. And this shows the breaking heart of these ladies. My friend, the actions of these two ladies, it shows us how frail and powerless we are faced with death, doesn't it? They went to the tomb just to look. We can't stop death. We just watch it. We can't stop it. We can't halt it. We're powerless. That great big stone in front of the tomb was the stone of finality. It was over. It was done. We have this phrase, don't we? You can't turn back the clock. And they couldn't. And even their looking, it couldn't change the situation. These women, they show us, these two Marys, how death threatens to defeat all of us. More about that in a minute. The second character around the tomb that I want us to look at is the angel. The angel from heaven. Now, he appeared there and he looked very strange, didn't he? I know when you wander through graveyards, sometimes they can be eerie places, especially at night or at dusk. They can be very eerie places, can't they? But you don't expect to see an angel there at dawn. And look how the angel was dressed. Verse 3 describes how this angel was dressed. Verse 3, his appearance was like lightning. The kind of weather, isn't it? Lightning. How powerful. How full of energy. How absolutely greater and more powerful than us is lightning. And Matthew says, and his clothes were white as snow. White, clean, and pure. This angel had come straight from heaven. Did you see it in verse 2? An angel of the Lord came down from heaven. And his description just underlines the fact that he'd come from heaven, where God is. God has got power and purity in equal measure. Lightning has power. White as snow, fresh fallen snow has the cleanness and the purity. God has all of that. And that's why that angel was dressed like that. But that wasn't the only unexpected thing in his arrival, was it? Look at verse 2. There was also a violent earthquake. A violent earthquake. What was that? Could have been the rumble of the earth as the stone was rolled away by the angel, couldn't it? But I think it was something even more than that. That violent earthquake surely was at the moment that God stepped down from heaven in the person of this angel and did something amazing inside that tomb. And the earth shook. You know, when Jesus died on the cross, darkness came over the whole land right there at that moment as he died on the cross. It was the middle of the day, bright sunshine, and darkness came and the earth shook and the rocks split. The world vibrating in the hands of a powerful God. When Jesus died, in the place of sinners. And here, at the moment that Jesus came back to life, there was a violent earthquake as God stepped into the world and did something big. Angels are heavenly creatures sent to do God's bidding. So whenever you see an angel, whenever you read of an angel visiting in the Bible, you know that God has got something to say or something to do in the world. And here, the angel came with something to do. There's no other reason for angels to be here, but to say something on behalf of God or to do something that God wants them to do. And here the angels work to open that tomb and to set Jesus free from death. This angel here at this tomb, it shows us that God has come to change the course of human history. The third characters around this tomb are the guards. They're there in verse 4, look, you can see them. The guards. We don't know exactly how many of them there were. Probably at least 4, maybe as many as 12 or something like that. Trained and strong and armed guards. They only had one mission. Protect this tomb at all costs. We don't want any tomb raiders. We don't want anybody coming in and rolling the stone away. We certainly don't want anyone stealing the body. That's their mission. Their only mission. Under no circumstances should anything or anyone disturb this tomb. Protect it with your life. And let me just tell you, if you were a guard or a jailer in those days, you wouldn't want that job. Because if your prisoners got out, your life was required of you as the jailer. So they wouldn't have really wanted the commission. You can imagine how vigilant they would have been. They'd have stayed up all night. They'd have worked out in shifts. 4 of them slept while 4 of them were awake. They'd have made sure not a moment was lost to in the shift handover. They would have been vigilant, looking. Their swords would have been at the ready. Those guards would have been protecting that tomb for their very lives. But look what happened. They were there to give a shock to anyone raiding the tomb. But look who got the shock in verse 4. The guards were so afraid of him, that's the angel, that they shook and became like dead men. That's what happened to these guards. They had the most incredible shock of their lives. They froze and became like dead men. These were men strong in the world's eyes. But when faced with the power of God to raise Jesus from the dead, we see they were absolutely puny. They couldn't stop what God had in mind to do, to raise his son from the dead. A stone couldn't stop him. The guards couldn't stop him. All the plans in all the world couldn't stop him. God was raising his son from the dead to change the course of human history. Some of the guards recovered and ran off to their bosses. Verse 11, look. Some of the guards went into the city, it says here, and they reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. And the chief priests, well, they cooked up a dodgy plan. And they told the guards what they had to do. They decided to cover it up. Huge cover up. It was a con. And so they paid the guards lots of money, and the guards had to lie. They were told, you must lie and say that someone stole the body. And if you lie, we'll give you this money. So these strong men that should have been reliable, should have fought off every attack, men that would look stupid if a bunch of fishermen just came and stole a body, they were prepared to act stupid and pretend the fishermen came and stole the body just for the money, for the bribe. They saved their skin because of the money, and they were prepared to lie. Friends, don't we see here the corruption of the world, even in the face of the truth? These guards, they played their part in this turning point in history. And they show man's impotence and puniness. And they also show man's lying heart in all of human history. You can trace the whole of history through. And when faced with evidence, friends, our hearts are corrupt and they lie and they twist events. Don't rely upon your own thinking and wisdom in the face of extraordinary situations. Because you will lie for money. And so will I. And so did these guards. But the fourth character around this tomb is the buried man himself, Jesus of Galilee. We're not given a blow-by-blow account by Matthew of the exact moment that he walked out of the tomb. It doesn't say it, does it? But we know it occurred because of what the angel says in verse 6 to the women. The angel says to these two Marys, he's not here, he has risen just as he said, referring to Jesus. So we know that he rose. What exact moment did it happen? Well, it's somewhere between verses 4 and 5, isn't it? The angel came, there was the earthquake, the stone was rolled back, the guards became absolutely frightened, they shook, became like dead men. And somewhere between verse 4 and 5, Jesus must have walked out of that tomb. Because then, verse 5, the angels spoke to the women and said, who came later, and don't be afraid. Don't look, you're looking for Jesus, but he's not here. So Jesus must have walked out of that tomb. And the angels, they want the Marys to be absolutely certain about it. So they offer them the evidence, don't they? Think of what they saw. Build this picture in your mind. First, they saw the stone rolled away, did the Marys. They knew something had happened. Then they saw the presence of this shining angel, this mysterious, powerful creature looking like lightning. Something miraculous must have occurred. Then they see the empty tomb. They're encouraged to have a look in. There's no body. Then they're encouraged to see the very place where he lay. Look, verse 6. Come and see the place where he lay. They can look in if they want. And there are the grave clothes that Jesus wore. And they're just flat and empty. There's no body. And then finally, in verse 7, you see, the angel says to them, go quickly, tell the disciples, he's risen from the dead. He's going ahead of you to Galilee, and there you will see him. Now I've told you. They're told that before long, Jesus will appear to them. All the evidence is pointing in one direction, that Jesus is truly alive. And they're caught up with amazement. They run off, verse 8, to go and tell the other disciples. And as they're running off, on the way, something incredible happens. Verse 9. Suddenly, Jesus met them. Doesn't matter what evidence they've seen then. All the other evidence pales into insignificance compared to that, doesn't it? All the other evidence is reliable. But this just transcends it all. They met Jesus. They see him. Not much about their meeting is recorded here. There's a lot more in John's Gospel. We're going to look at that tonight. In John's Gospel. So we see what happened between Jesus and Mary as they met. But in that one moment, the buried man proves that he has raided his own tomb. He is alive again and is far more than just a man. Friends, a question to you. Is this not the most life-changing moment in all of human history? Not just for these Marys, but for all of us. If Jesus remains in the tomb, then his message is no different than anyone else. He came and he went. If Jesus remains in the tomb, then his life is no more special than anyone else. He was popular for a while and then he went. If Jesus remains in the tomb, then his death that he died on Good Friday is no more significant than anyone else's death. But if he doesn't stay dead, if he doesn't remain in the tomb, if he rises and shocks ladies and guards, he shocks people of faith and people of doubt, he shocks them equally. If he rises and that resurrection vindicates all of his claims and his credentials to be the Son of God, able, as the children told us this morning, to do anything. If that is so, then doesn't every person that ever lives have to listen and consider him? I say to you again, I think it's far more remarkable that our lives could be the same. Facing this, that's far more remarkable than ever the consideration of whether Jesus could rise from the dead. He transforms history. He's a life changer. And let me give you three reasons why he's a life changer. One, because he's still alive today. If Jesus couldn't die then, he can't die ever. He's indestructible. It's not Doctor Who that's indestructible. He's a figment of someone's imagination. He goes into his TARDIS and he flies off into who knows where and who knows when. That's just imaginary. But this is an eyewitness account. Jesus is truly indestructible. He cannot be killed. And so he lives forever. And if he lives forever, my friend, he spans all of history and you can never run away from him. Even after death, you can't get away from him. You can't escape one who won't die. He's still alive, and he calls us to believe in him. That's why he's a life changer. Here's a second reason. His death can never be irrelevant. His death now can never be irrelevant. If he came back to life, then surely his death must open a doorway to heaven. That's not irrelevant, is it? He came back to life to open a way that others can walk from earth to heaven. He died for sins to snap the reasons to keep us away from God, to break the bondage of sin and death, and to open a way to heaven. He's a life changer through his death. It's not irrelevant. And there's a third reason. Because our death need never again be the end. Our death need never be the end. Jesus has proved there is life beyond the grave. He's proved that it's real. His tomb was real. His body was real. His wounds were real. His body was truly laid in that tomb and then truly came back to life. And the power, God says, that was used to raise him from the dead will be used to raise you from the dead. Death for you won't be the end either. Nor for me. God can raise you to life spiritually right now. He can make you to understand things you've never understood. He can give you faith you've never had, belief you've always struggled. Don't you want to believe? Have you ever desired to believe, but you found your doubt has overwhelmed it? My friend, look at the life changer, Jesus Christ. And he causes people to believe because he is a transformer of people's lives and destiny. And then you will be totally sure that death for you will not be your final enemy. But death will just be a doorway into heaven. And being with Jesus. That's why he's a life changer. He's still alive. His death was never irrelevant, but totally powerful. And because he has shown that death need not be the end. When you realize those things, my friend, it changes your destiny. It'll change the destiny of these children and all of us adults. To realize that Jesus is alive and we can face him and meet him personally. And follow him. Friends, he raided his own tomb so that your tomb would not be the end of your existence, but that you might live forever with God in heaven. He's the only one that can do it, and he did it. Will you believe in him? Pray that our doubts would be washed away and our lives would be changed by him.